Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston, a show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We're here with a very special guest from Canada, True North. I apologize, got tongue-tied there for a minute. True North Paranormal with Dean Trumbly. There we go, getting tongue-tied again. Sorry, listeners. Dean Trumbly, and I do believe, Dean, you have one of the other members with you as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do. I actually have the host of the show with me, John Kozuszka, and hopefully I'm not all tongue-tied either.
Well, I certainly appreciate both of you taking your time today. I know you're working very hard there in the Canadian area to get your name out, to promote your show a little bit. So it's a great honor that you chose Paranormal Truth and Reality to take a few moments of your time and talk a little bit about what you guys do and the differences between what you see here in a lot of American shows and what you're planning to do. Because I know you guys stand out a little bit differently with your techniques. You try to be a little bit more logical from time to time and really jump in with a unique approach. So let's just start with what got you guys into the paranormal.
Well, I'll actually let John start on that one because I came in later in the game. So, John?
I guess what got me into it is ever since I was a little kid, my grandfather had passed away. And you know, a couple weeks later, I was at my grandma's house after things settled down. And I swore I saw my grandpa walk past me in the kitchen area. So naturally, I got my curiosity piqued, and that kind of influenced me into the whole paranormal side of things. You know, I was that kid in school that you'd hear there was a ghost in the library, and I wanted proof. I needed to find it. So I'd say ever since I was about 6 years old, I was in.
Interesting. You know, it's kind of unique how that particular situation happens with a lot of investigators. It seems like a lot of us get curious at an early age because of what we ran into. I've had that conversation many, many times, and it just kind of branches off from there, and you learn more, and you learn more, and you get interested, and you learn more. It's a fascinating field. So you started as a child, obviously. What made you decide, you know, as you were going along, to kind of go, well, you know, I kind of want to do a TV show here. I want to get into more in-depth things. I want to spend some more time around a couple other team members. I really want to give a go to it.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, a TV show was never a forethought of mine whatsoever. I was, with us, it was kind of right place, right time. My angle is I wanted to help people. You know, I wanted to help people who shared the same experience as me so I can give them the answer that I never got. You know, and my wife, same way.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny, Chris, when you talk about the TV show. I'm an owner of a production company. We already produce a TV show that airs to over 80 million households worldwide. And I come from actually a science background. I'm educated in wildlife and fisheries biology, and I guess you could say prior to, you know, watching a lot of the paranormal shows, I was kind of the true skeptic. I was the one that, you know, sat down and analyzed everything and said, I've got an answer for it. And what happened was, is I met John and Karina, and, you know, I said to them, you know, I'm really interested in this because the one thing about being a scientist is I'm not going to write off something just because I'm a scientist. I mean, I'm trained in research methodology. And, you know, for me to simply say something doesn't exist because there's not a science there, I mean, if you go back 50 years ago, there was no such thing as coelacanth, and all of a sudden we found them and they do exist. So we kind of combined the two, and I said to John and Karina, what I'd like to do is bring science and methodology to the table and then combine it with the paranormal investigation techniques and approach it from that aspect.
Absolutely. I think more people should do that. That's a part of what we're doing in our project here with Generation Truth, is just getting to the bottom of the truth while we're telling stories of people like yourself and showing the aspects from every angle. Because, you know, ironically, there's always been a debate about how science and the paranormal doesn't mix, but they're not too far different. It's just some people look at it a little bit differently, if that makes sense. You know, it's all collecting data, looking at those answers that we can't explain yet, and maybe something will connect.
Well, no, and I fully agree with that, because it's always been one of my pet peeves, is that working in the science realm, and I worked all the way up to the international level. I worked on the United Nations Environmental Committee and as a Canadian delegate. So I'm very used to working with science methodology. And what I find is that when people think it's something that they can't believe in, it's amazing how basic science principles get thrown out the door. And I'm kind of like what you said. Like, I think applying science to this actually makes paranormal investigation better. And, you know, I don't go into any building, I don't go into any situation, you know, biasing myself. I'm going in with a clear mind, and I'll let the evidence talk.
That's the best way to do it. I'm a lot similar to you, Dean, because I've spent so many time around universities. I started my journey, even though I'm not a scientist myself, I was curious on seeing the scientific end and the opinion. So I spent a lot of time at universities interviewing college professors, asking them questions. It's amazing how a lot of people within the community still look at paranormal happenings. They just they do it like you just explained. You're going into it with a logical mind. You're not looking to debunk it, and you're not looking to not debunk it. It's, look, the evidence is going to speak for itself. If the data adds up, then we've got something here. Let's find out what it is.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that was one of the things that really worked well for me, is that when I met John, even though John is on, you know, the side of paranormal investigation, and you know, he's done this kind of his whole life and had situations happen to him. The one thing I really respected about John is the fact that, you know, he's not going to jump to those conclusions. He's not going to make those stretches. You know, what we want to do is use as many tools, as many, you know, situations as possible to tie it together. And, you know, even at the end of it, you know, we're not necessarily going to say it's this or it's that, but what we're going to say is all of the evidence we collected, we have no logical explanation to explain what happened. And
there's something
I will
there.
Say, yeah, I will say, coming into this, I definitely lean towards the side of I'm going to be able to explain everything. Now that I'm deep in it, and, you know, we've done a lot of investigation in some amazing areas, I'm questioning some of my own principles.
It's amazing how that happens, isn't it? You know, I grew up similar to your host of the show. I grew up in a paranormal environment. I thought I was nuts. So I tried to look at both sides of it, and then I became more logical because, you know, you go into a lot of massive commercial locations here in the United States especially, you don't get a lot of activity. You get a lot of logical explanations a lot of times, but you don't get a lot of activity. But then you run into those two or three, like you mentioned, it's a flip of the coin. I know what I'd seen before. I know what I'd believed before. But to have other people there to affirm something's going on and not be able to logically explain it is a fascinating thing. It does kind of flip your whole reality, especially if you're a debunker. If you're more the one that goes in going, yeah, all of this is going to be explained, and you run into that one situation where you just can't explain it, no matter how much you look at it.
yeah, exactly, right. I can say, and you know, on my standpoint, I'm kind of the same way as Dean. I mean, I want to give people answers at the end of the day. So, you know, I'm not going to tell somebody, hey, your house is haunted at the end of an investigation. I mean, my approach is and always will be, you know, we found this, we can't explain this, so definitely we want to say there's something here.
Well, that's a good approach to have. I don't, you know, after 23 years of being investigations and tagging along with investigators and so forth, I found it can be a very dangerous thing walking in and telling somebody, yes, your house is haunted. Even though there may be something there. I mean, this is something I had a discussion with our young team. Generation Truth has a very young team. They just started investigations. The goal is to have them tag along with professional investigators and learn as well as do investigations themselves, so that we can kind of show how everybody works, to give you a little bit of a background there. But I had that conversation with them. residential is a tricky thing because you're going into it to help the family. So it's not like a commercial location. You're not going into it because you want to show off all the gadgets and have a little bit of fun. You really have to take them into consideration. And one of the things sometimes is simply, if you don't know whether the house is haunted or not, don't jump to the assumption it is.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's one thing that we, like in our show, I mean, we have True North Paranormal where we're filming the full episodes in preparation for television, but we also do what we call paranormal probes, and that's where we go into residences and we try to assist people. And, you know, you're right, Chris, like you got to be really careful on that stuff because some people really get tied up into it. They're scared. Or they're nervous or they're afraid of what you're going to find out. They're even afraid that sometimes if you come in with the investigation, that's going to stir things up. And, you know, we always tell people right off the hop, just because you have something happening doesn't necessarily mean it's paranormal. And I'd like to give an example if I could. We were investigating a residence where the family was, you know, feeling like they're watched all the time. You know, their skin was tingling. They were, you know, nervous and, you know, they had like all these things that were happening, these bangs and these bumps and everything. And of course, you know, they were a believer family and they were scared. Like, I mean, literally scared of what was going on. And we went in there and we did a fairly intense investigation. And at the end of it, we never turned up anything we couldn't explain. But the one thing we did find out is it was an older house. It had a ton of exposed wiring. It had very, very old furnace and old, conjunction box. And literally some of the levels of the EMF we were getting in there were off the charts.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we weren't going to tell people that what you're experiencing is paranormal or isn't paranormal. But what we told them was, is here's the effects of these high levels of EMF and what they can do. And they were very thankful for that. And I find that a lot of paranormal teams, when they go in, I think, you know, the expectation there is they have to come up with evidence to prove. And I think it's one of the things we're really trying to avoid, which is, you know, we're going to go in and do the best we can and, you know, stay as non-biased as possible.
Well, I think that's a wonderful approach, and I think it's great to approach it from alternate angles. I'd love to see you guys here in the United States. I'd love to be able to. It fascinates me how the different perspectives from different countries work together with the same perspectives we all do, but you also see things in a little bit of a different light. You know, each country has a different way of looking at things and how to approach things. And there's just simply not enough television shows that are on right now that come from different countries from different perspectives. So I'm actually excited to see you guys a little bit on. I watched some of the stuff you put out so far. I think it's very amazing. I think you guys do a great job. But let's talk about some of the equipment that you use, how you go about it. I know we just talked about EMF a little bit. There's a lot of other different types of equipment that are out there. Some of them are not as effective as others. They're just kind of attention getters. What type of equipment do you guys use outside of the EMF reader in the field, and how do you apply them?
Yeah, it's You know, I find like we have a large array of equipment, and I find we always have these preconceived things of what we're going to do going in. But really what we do is we let the situation as it is playing out in the investigation kind of dictate to us. But we do have a few things that we use. And I mean, John, maybe you want to kind of explain some of the stuff that is kind of our main go-tos.
I mean, some of the things I know are kind of my go-to is obviously going to be my millimeter. I love having that by my side. It's going to tell me everything that's happening in that room. I mean, you know, I can't lie about the numbers. The numbers aren't going to lie to me about what it's presenting. You know, another one, I like using my spirit box. I really do. I mean, you get some pretty good answers in there. That's one of my go-tos. It's always in my pocket when we're filming, whether you see it or not. It's in my left pocket of my hoodie at all times. You know, we've got some great answers. You know, more recently, a probe, we had the same intelligent response come out a couple times where the entity told us its name was Paul. So, I mean, we've gotten some good truth that way. And, you know, confirmation rather than truth. So, you know, there's things like that. I mean, kind of like Dean was saying, we have a whole array of things that we use. We have our laser grid that I've yet to see something with.
Yeah.
You know?
And also, I think one of the other ones that we really do like is the FLIR. Because again, it provides you with like hard data. I mean, let's face it, temperature is temperature. If there's something there that you can't see and it's colder or hotter, you know, it does help point you in a direction. But one thing I'll say now, you see, this is where you'll see me a little bit different, but like the spirit box, I'm very, I don't want to say skeptical, but what I am on the spirit box is I really push, our team, especially John, in that just because we hear something come through, what we need to look for is either intelligent responses that are speaking directly to the questions that we're asking, or consistent responses where you rule out, you know, AM, FM interference. And I think, again, you know, it's one of those tools where it's out there, and just because you hear something come through doesn't necessarily mean it's paranormal. You know, so you have to kind of apply other principles, you know, to that device. But usually a lot of the, I would say our go-to devices are definitely the EMF, the Mel meter. We do like the ghost box or ghost detection boxes because, again, something physical has to be there to make that thing go off, you know, which is similar to the REM pods. So I would say that's kind of where we sit. And then, of course, scientific deduction. You know, it's not necessarily a tool, but what it is that when something happens, you look at the entire environment around you and make sure that there's not something natural happening that could account for what's going on.
Well, the best tool is the brain, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can certainly understand and perfect, wholeheartedly agree with that. I wish a lot of listeners, a lot of the younger investigators, pay close attention, because obviously both of you are very seasoned investigators. I can tell by the discussion. You know, these are very important things that people starting in the field should actually just soak in. I'm a skeptic myself of the spirit box for the same reasons, Dean, though I understand, John, why most people use them. I have an audio engineering background, which is why I'm a little bit more skeptical than most people. Now, I will say, even though I'm skeptical on it, I have seen a few instances that, in fact, quite recently, I saw one that I simply can't explain out of it that was pretty interesting. So I can definitely understand applying the science to it and kind of, you know, using some deductive reasoning. But they are unique pieces on the flip side. You know, every now and then, whatever ITC you use, it's just like using a digital recorder. You do get some things that just, they make you go, hmm.
Especially
if you use a Faraday cage.
Yeah, no, and I agree, and I think that's the thing, like with any piece of equipment. Like, I mean, even if I go back to my wildlife and fisheries biology days, I mean, just because you're getting a reading from equipment doesn't mean that you just automatically believe in it. You got to make sure that, you know, it's calibrated, and you know, for paranormal research type stuff, it's not like there's a calibration, but it's like John says, I think your brain is kind of the calibration for these things. Make sure that you're analyzing everything from all aspects. Don't, just because you hear a voice come through or just because you get an EMF spike does not necessarily mean that that is something paranormal in nature. And I think part of being a good investigator, and I've always learned this from my university days, is that sometimes no data is good data. And you know, so it, and again, I'll go back to the EMF. Like, you know, we weren't getting any paranormal data, but we were getting other data that was helping us to explain the situation that was affecting that family. And as a result of that investigation, they did some of the changes, and now the family is happy and they're not experiencing anything anymore.
Yeah, that's, you know, I like that quote. Sometimes no data is good data. I have a friend that he's, he works in the university, and he's a geologist by trade, and he's used that statement several times, because when you're testing certain materials, often the easiest way to explain that is no data is good data. You know, if you get the same thing over and over and over again that you can explain, then, well, you already know your answer. But if you get something that's an abnormality, then you hold on to it because, well, it's an abnormality, if that makes sense.
So it does. And I mean, you know, I've done that many a time because, you know, it's tough. Like when you go in and you're sitting down and you're doing your preliminary interviews with the family, they're passionate. They're scared. They have emotions running everywhere. They're really, truly believing in what they have assessed. The toughest thing as an investigator is to make sure that you are not being influenced by what is being said there and kind of starting to already formulate your outcome. And so, you know, I kind of like John and I are really careful that when we go in, it's kind of like you develop a hypothesis and then you collect the data to test it. And then only at the very end, and the end is not when the investigation's over. It's when you come back and you review everything, your footage, you know, all of your data in a better computer system with better. And then once that's done, then make your conclusions and understand that your conclusions are going to affect people. Because at the end of the day, as investigators, we have to come home. Those people have to live there.
Uh-huh. And being from a haunted home that had several investigators come in, as well as a priest and numerous people, I can relate with that a little bit because, you know, it can be a tough situation learning how to deal with that as a person in a residence. I know it took me many, many years to understand that though they couldn't explain it and they could say, yes, something is here, that I was in control of the situation. I had to have many people explain to me how to be in control of it, you know, how to bring positive atmosphere into it and understand that, you know, these things only affect you if you allow them to.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I mean, you're kind of your own cleansing tool, you know, and that's one thing that, you know, we're careful on because, you know, again, some of the homes you go into have different types of belief systems and you have to make sure that you're, you know, you're working within those belief systems. But yeah, we've had that happen a lot.
So let's talk about some of the locations that you went to. I know you've done some residential. I'm assuming you've probably done some more commercial locations around the area as well, and some of your more unique experiences that you've ran into so that the listeners can kind of, you know, get a feel for what you guys have done.
Well, that's a pretty big list. I mean, as an investigator, I mean, one of my favorite things is when there's a big bang and somebody's near you and they're kind of like, wow, they're just blown away. And, you know, my very first day in front of the cameras ever, you know, I was with Dean Trumbly here and Kent Mitchie was on our other camera. And poor Kent, we were filming at the Vernontown Theater, which is one of the most haunted theaters in Canada, its reputation anyway. You know, we'd already been getting some fairly decent results. And, you know, we did our investigation inside this place, and we're moving out of the theater to go more into the foyer and investigate where these footsteps were that we'd heard. And poor Kent came out white as a ghost, and that poor guy watched the chair slam down in front of him, you know.
And Kent comes from a science background. He's one of our cameramen. And I could tell you, like, when he comes out, he's not saying anything, and he pretty much has no blood left in his face, and he has to go kind of sit in a corner and assess what it was he saw, you know, and that's what he said. He goes, you know, it's not like I just heard it. He goes, I physically watched this thing spring-loaded, move all the way down halfway, slam down, stay there, and then spring back up. And he had no explanation for it. And unfortunately, he's the only one that experienced it. So, of course, we had to razz him a little bit on that. But
you know, that it is unique, though, how that happens a lot. It seems like sometimes when you're rolling the cameras, nothing happens until the one camera is not on the situation.
But to get to your question there, Chris, we filmed so far two big locations, and you're right, like the locations we go for the TV show, unless we have a resident that we really know, you know, has proven to have a lot of activity and the necessary, you know, to be able to fill a 1 hour episode. Most locations we do are commercial. We filmed two locations. One is the Vernon Town Theater, which was, built back in the early 1900s. It has, definitely a lot of history of, ghost reportings and that. After that, one of the other ones that we did, which is probably one of the most, I don't want to say disturbing, but it was the Kamloops Indian Residential School, and it is a massive facility that was basically built back in the 1800s, and it was for the sole purpose of stripping the Aboriginal or North American Indian culture from them and assimilating them in. And I mean, there's, you know, huge amounts of abuse that's been recorded, their deaths. And then on top of that, after, if that's not enough negative energy, it was turned into a tuberculosis clinic. And so literally there was like hundreds, if not thousands of deaths recorded there. And we did an investigation there. Our third and fourth location that we actually have coming up here very shortly,
yeah,
is we're going to be filming at the Powerhouse Theater, which is an old theater that was built. It's known to have multiple reports of three different entities that are within the building itself. And then the other one is one of the most haunted locations in Western Canada called the Katani House. And, I don't know, I guess if I was to draw kind of a story that would be similar in the U.S., it's a lot like the Winchester, mansion. You know, a young lady was basically held captive there by her parents for 25 years before she was allowed into the public. And, there's definitely a lot of reportings of activity going on there. So we have some really interesting locations in Canada for sure.
Absolutely.
Wow. They sound amazing. I wish I could tag along with you guys. I would love to be at some of those places. So when is your show due to air?
Well, what it is right now is we're basically in the production phase. And we're working actually right now with a company out of Los Angeles. Well, they're actually based in Canada, but they have an office out of Los Angeles. And we are actually going to be submitting the first episode to them, hopefully at the beginning of this week. And then from there, the executive producers head into kind of their magic. So we're kind of on the production end. We're more feet on the ground. They're more of the business component. So at that point, we will be able to give you a little bit more detail. But right now, I guess you could say we're kind of the flunkies on the ground, recording the fun stuff.
I can understand that. Definitely. It's a process. A lot of people, I think, that generally jump into YouTube and a lot of these things, they don't understand that, you know, it can take a while to get a good television production out. I mean, you've got, like you said, you've got the ground floor and the people working on that, then you got to hand it over to another production company and executive producers, and they have to kind of retool things a little bit. And eventually you got a good show. So I can certainly relate with that a little bit. We just started here with our post-filming, and we've still got probably a year's worth of production before we can hand it over to executive producers just to put together what we're working on. So I can relate. It takes a long time. The key is making sure you keep going out there and you keep filming and you keep pumping away and putting some product together.
No, that's right. Like, I mean, right now we are literally to this point 2 years in the making. A lot of it came down to, you know, really, I mean, you know how it is with production. I mean, on the production, the front end, you're establishing everything. You're establishing how you're going to do stuff, what makes you unique. Getting out, working with the hosts like John and Karina are very seasoned in investigation, but they're not very seasoned sitting in front of a camera. And as people know, it's different. When that camera's staring at you, it's a lot tougher than what you think. And also, too, even for seasoned investigators, the cameras change the way you do things. And so getting used to that is also something big. So we're taking our time, and we're doing it right, and we're fine-tuning the skills. And we're at the point now where we are literally days away. Actually, the reason John's over here right now is we're just doing the final voiceover work for the first episode at the residential school, and that will be shipped out to the producers, or executive producers, on Monday and Tuesday.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing it once it's a final project. I think you guys will do a wonderful job on things. It sounds like you're putting a lot of time and effort into it, so it'll be pretty amazing to see the final product and know that I got a chance to talk to you guys ahead of time and learn a little bit from behind the scenes. Now, do you have a lot of the paranormal teams have mediums that tag along, or psychic mediums, or empaths, or so forth. Do you have an empath on the team currently?
Yeah, actually, John's wife Serena is an empath, and how we look at it is she is an important arsenal in our bag of tools.
Oh yeah.
One of the things that we do at the beginning of our investigations is Karina does an empath walkthrough, and she kind of, how we put it is, she kind of hones in on the hot spots that we're going to investigate. She's the one that kind of says, okay, here's where you go, and here's where you need to concentrate less on. Now, for as far as the medium, we have not had a medium involved yet. But John, maybe you can say, like, we've worked with a couple that we've been talking to.
Yeah, there's Michelle, that's one of the ones we've been dealing with, and we definitely haven't dismissed the idea, to say the least. In fact, we encourage it. There's one in Vernon. What was her name again?
Yeah, I don't remember the other one, but we do have another medium in Vernon as well too that we're working with, and I'll tell you how we plan on kind of employing that, Chris, is that we're really going to try having a lot of the evidence work with us in the front end. But I will admit, and we're actually in the middle of an investigation right now at a residence where we definitely have collected information and evidence that we cannot explain, and we have tried to debunk it 8 ways from Sunday. And the problem we're having is we have pieces of information, and based on the tools we have at hand, we can't tie them together. We don't know how to tie them together. We know that there's got to be a story here. We can't tie it together. And that's where I think someone who is proven to be a skilled medium could be of assistance.
Yeah, and, I've had the privilege of tagging along with some fairly professional teams, and they keep open-minded. It really depends on how gifted the medium is. And I mean, you got to be picky, but there are some that are fairly successful. I've met a few that and I'm not a big one on psychic mediums, coming from the logical standpoint, coming from speaking to most people that have been in the universities and the science standpoint, you kind of have to doubt it a little bit. But I mean, I've seen some pretty impressive results from a few of them. In fact, one of them even told me I was ill before I actually knew it myself, believe it or not. And turns out she was right. So it's worth a shot,
Yeah. But I think in all honesty, and again, how we really look at it, and we're of the same aspect. I mean, but at the same time, and it's one of the reasons why, like even with Karina, that we say that, we look at them as a tool. And I mean, I know it kind of sounds horrible calling someone that, but the reality is that, in a way that maybe even though we don't believe or we're skeptical on or whatever, it's still something that can collect some information. And if that information, you apply, the principles of making sure that, there's no way that they understand anything going into the situation. They're not exposed to any of the evidence. And, you basically kind of create your, your neutral area where you know for a fact that if they come in and they start saying stuff that ties in strongly with your evidence, that ties in strongly with the history or, whatever, then that's why I'm saying that, I think it can be a useful tool to help maybe pull some of those things together. But at the same time, you have to apply the same skepticism that, I think I've seen more off the mark than I have on the mark, but at the same time, I'm not going to rule it out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Strictly speaking from the data point of view, there are more that are off the mark than on the mark. And then if you add the common mentalist abilities, I had the great privilege of studying mentalism in Las Vegas, Nevada for quite a while, and went to the same school that a lot of mentalists that are fairly well known have went to. Though I'm not as nearly as skilled as any of them, I can see where it's easy for both sides of the coin to come up, because if you really know what you're doing in a large setting, and you have a little bit of information, a little bit of background, like you're saying, you try to prevent that so that you can kind of get a real feel for it. But if they have that ahead of time, it's easy to come off in a light that makes you seem like you have an ability you don't. So I think a lot more teams should apply that approach. And the best mediums I've ever spoke to prefer not to know anything about the situation. They want to go in blind. That's the best way to do it. From an investigator standpoint, at least.
No, definitely. And I know John and I talked about that because, like I said, you know, again, we would like to have someone there on call. But, you know, it is literally a walk in, say nothing, throw the camera on and say, okay, tell me what you got. And there's not any interaction. There's not anything. And you let them roll. And, you know, if we've already collected the evidence, we're going to see what you got to say. And if it's out to lunch, then, you know, it's no different than a non-calibrated, you know, tool. It's you throw the data out and you move on to the next.
So let's talk about a little bit more of the mythological side of tools. There's a lot of people that believe many, many different ways. When you come to some of the more interesting, controversial subjects, I ask all of my investigators this, and feel free to elaborate however you want, because people have many, many different views on it. But what are your opinions on a Ouija board, as an example?
You know what? I'm going to say this one as plainly as I can. Lorraine Warren is my idol when it comes to paranormal investigators. And Lorraine said that she will never use one, do not use one. And I have honored those words, and I will stay as far away as possible because I just don't know what's coming through. I have no way of knowing.
And then you see, then you get my side with the science side, as I say that it was a great game that was developed by somebody. But I mean, it's, I don't know, like again, I think the problem I have is that I'm a hands-on kind of guy. I'm an evidence kind of guy. And I need to see something physical and tangible in front of me. I do know though, however, they draw fear in a lot of people. And I know like John is one of them, and I can't discount, you know, what John is saying, because, I mean, he has his own reasons and his own logics and his own beliefs, because I think that's the problem with a Ouija board is you cross over into a belief system now. And at that point, and I'm very open in that way, that I 100%, regardless of what my belief system is that I do believe in other people's belief systems the way they believe them. And I'm not saying I believe in it physically, but I believe that, you know, they have that system of belief. And I think that's where you kind of got to be careful on, you know, those types of things, because I've met some people that strongly believe in something, and I'm not going to be the one sitting here telling them that they're out to lunch on it. My personal opinion, though, I don't believe in them. I mean, I really don't. I don't think that it can be something that causes those types of issues.
Well, I had the great privilege of working with many, many people and several universities testing out about 2,700 to 2,800 Ouija boards in some very distinctive haunted locations. I did not receive any activity while we were doing this. I did learn one thing, and this applies to the people that won't touch them as well as the people that do touch them. You said something very, very important, and that is the belief system. A Ouija board, like anything that we do, and this is something that I talk about all the time when I'm in university settings or when I'm talking at conventions, a Ouija board, like anything we do, is an open invitation. Now, the reason Lorraine was against it, and she's a very wonderful lady, and the reason a lot of people are against it is because of that open invitation. What I don't think a lot of people realize is a lot of what we do is the same way. You really have to be cautious on how you do it if you walk into a truly haunted location, which is rare. But, I mean, if you think about how you apply a Ouija board, now, we all know the scientifics involved. We know the ideometer effect. We know a lot of that stuff. And we know that that applies if you're looking at the science end. But you're asking the same questions if you use a digital recorder. Are you here? Are you dead? What's your name? Can you respond to me? All of these things happen with a digital recorder just like you would use a Ouija board. So is there really a difference between the two?
Well, no, and I think, again, that's where it comes down to the belief system component. And
yeah.
And you know what? I mean, it has also been proven, like even in medical science, that, you know, the power of the mind can do amazing things. And, you know, you get guys that have had cancer and then they don't. And, you know, I think that's kind of where, again, it's why it's called paranormal, right? Like, it's not the normal.
Absolutely.
And for any of us to sit and say that we know exactly what's going on, well, I'll tell you, from a science perspective, you're a liar. I mean, we don't know exactly what's going on. No? Even for myself, I say, you got to be really cautious on these things. Like, you know, even though I may have a certain belief, but the one thing I will tell you that I do believe, and this does have some science principle to it, is I do believe in energy. I mean, when you go to school and university, energy is a consistent thing. It doesn't disappear. It may transform. It may, you know, turn into a different type of energy, but whatever. I mean, energy moves on. And I do believe in good energy and bad energy. And I do believe that, like any energy, it can accumulate and it can dissipate. And I do believe it can change form as well, too. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that that's a spirit or a ghost, but I'm just saying that energy can be there. But I also do believe, because it can happen, energy can attach to stuff. And I do really believe in that, you know, energy can attach to stuff. And so, again, now you start adding the strong belief system, the human mind, an object, and a belief, and you know what? The sky could be the limit on those types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you were expecting something like that to happen, you're basically inviting the danger to come in. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with people not touching a Ouija board. Because, I mean, like any type of object like you're mentioning, if you're already have a belief system, you already expect that item is going to carry a negative response, and you build up that negativity, then you might very well experience something negative. Now, what that negativity is it a ghost? Is it a spirit? Is it a demon? Is it good? Is it evil? Well, none of us know. But I can certainly agree with that, absolutely. I support both sides of the coin because I don't like to interfere with people's personal belief systems. I think that's very, very important in the paranormal to understand that we can all come from different avenues and still work together rather than argue all the time about it, which you see quite a lot when you're dealing with social media.
Yeah, but you know what? I can tell you, and you know, in the other area that I do work in, and we do have a production in, I don't think it matters if it's the paranormal field or if it's talking about the sky being blue or not. I mean, on social media, everybody's going to argue about everything. I mean, that's
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It doesn't matter where you're at. You're going to find that argument somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it's funny, I always tell John, like, when we got on TV, because I've been, myself, I'm a host on a different show, and I've been on TV for 6 years, and I always say that whether you're a politician or in the public eye, there's the 5-95 rule. 5% will love you, 5% is going to hate you, 90% really don't care.
I like that. That's actually, I'm going to have to remember that. That's a good thing to apply. That's actually quite true.
Yeah. I mean,
That's kind of the way it works when you end up in personality. I see somebody didn't turn off my office phone. I apologize, guys. So you might hear a little ring there for a moment. So let's talk a little bit about your show, where people can find you, obviously. It's very, very important that we know where to find the website so that people can follow you and how we can operate there and, you know, just let the listeners know where to find you, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we have a few different things. We're very strong on social media, even though we just kind of pounded it. But we are on Facebook, and we're fairly active on there. We do have a closed group as well too, where we post stuff. Our website is truenorthparanormal.com. And we do put everything on there we do a series called Cold Facts. And what it is it's just a small educational series on various paranormal things. They're usually under a minute. And you can click on that and get that information. We just posted one today on Shadow People because one of the sites we just investigated actually had a shadow a people situation that's going on. We have our paranormal probes which are about 20 minutes long, and those are residential investigations, and they're just kind of a Cold Snow version of the investigation. And again, you can access that through our website, and we also have YouTube as well too that you can go to. And then, of course, our main episodes on the website, you can go there, and we do have kind of small little reports that are on there on where we're investigating. And right now, because obviously, because it's for TV, we don't release too much, but we do let people know if we did confirm activity or if we did not. But really, I'd say probably the best places to get a hold of us is our website and Facebook and YouTube.
Wonderful. A little bit of a pause, guys. You're listening to True North Paranormal. They're a Canada paranormal team that's actually working on a television show currently, so make sure that you pay close attention to them. We're with both Dean and Tom, I do believe. I apologize if I got your name wrong there. I'm lousy with names, guys, by the way. I know I'm in radio and lousy with names. That's we're at BBS Radio, www.bbs.com. BBS is one of the largest digital radio stations here in America. If you're going to go with the best, make sure you go with BBS. Donald and his team are wonderful people. They work with people nationwide in digital radio and podcasts. We will be Generation Truth, Team Rat, and Paranormal Truth and Reality will be at Post Town Elementary tomorrow, from roughly about 9 a.m. till at least 5 to 7 p.m. I encourage you to stop by, look at the filming schedule. Teams, if you're out here in the United States, make sure you sign up so that we can follow along with you. We're going to be doing some educational interviews with the team as well, looking at all kinds of different perspectives before our production first airs in 2020, and hopefully gets on several networks that we're working out now in 2022. So make sure that you stop into Post Town Elementary in Middletown, Ohio. Say hi to the team. There's Santiago from The Walking Dead is going to be there. There's also going to be a little magician team. They're doing a tour of one of the two or three of the different rooms, since it's one of the most haunted elementaries here in the state of Ohio and the United States. In closing, guys, I know you mentioned shadow people, and we didn't really get a chance to get into that. How often do you experience that out there in the field so far?
Not very often, actually.
Yeah,
believe it or not,
very rarely.
Yeah, it's this is actually one of the first investigations we've done where there was claims of shadow people. It is not a phenomenon that we come across very regularly, at least in investigations. I mean, definitely talking to people, you hear about it. But I think one of the reasons we did the cold facts on it is, you know, understanding that, you know, at least from our opinion and our perspective, that shadow people can actually be multiple causes. It's not just one phenomenon.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, logically speaking, it can be everything from the human mind and perception to other situations going on that, it's interesting that you mentioned it. I don't get a chance to talk about it that often, which is why I figured I'd bring it up with you guys just quite briefly. I know it's a phenomenon that's been going on for, I would say, at least 20 years now, maybe a little longer than that. People claim to see shadow people in large, vast amounts, all the way down to a shadow person in your home. Very few of those are physically paranormally unexplained, but you can run into one or two every now and then where you just kind of go, I have no idea what that was or why it happened.
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you, Chris, like, you know, this is one of the things where, you know, and it's why I say that you never draw conclusions at the end of an investigation, but come back and analyze. And the location that we are at, they were claiming a lot of evidence of shadow people, and it wasn't just one family member, but multiple. And then when we got there, you know, the house is literally surrounded on three sides by busy roads where lights come directly in, multiple windows. I mean, I'll be honest with you, there was a few times that even when we were there, we caught ourselves off guard because you're getting multiple natural shadows that are being cast in different directions, and it really caught us. And we kind of wrote it off, you know, as being explainable. But then when we got back to the studio this morning, we started reviewing some of the footage. You know, we didn't catch shadow people, but we're catching other things, you know, other evidence that all of a sudden now has us kind of questioning that, you know, maybe we were too quick to jump to a explainable conclusion, and maybe there is something, you know, going on there. Now, we're not going to jump one way or other yet because we still have a lot of analysis we have to do.
Oh, yeah, hours of it.
That's something I think a lot of people don't realize as well, is when you start getting into the analysis and the video and you're putting together a production, that's a lot of work. I mean, a lot of work.
Yeah, it is like hundreds of gigabytes of footage that you're going through on multiple cameras. And because it's paranormal, like regular TV, you just go and pick the good bits, everything like that. But because it's paranormal research, like a lot of people don't realize that most of those cameras have audio. And so really now you have like EDP devices that are running everywhere. And, you know, sometimes we've had cameras with directional mics that we weren't doing EVP sessions, and you pick up EVPs and very clear ones. Mm-hmm. So you have to review everything, and it is hours and hours and hours of work.
Yep, and then try to put that into a one-hour TV show, which is not an easy task. That's the reason that I started off with doing Generation Truth as a documentary. I want to do two-hour slots because there's a little bit more time to put everything in there if you catch something. If not, then you can tell the stories of multiple people and so forth. So, but I don't know. It's still kind of a flip of the coin. I don't know if anybody's ever going to watch a two-hour slot, but we've got it spaced out, so. Hopefully people will be interested in what we're doing. Back to your point, though, I think people are going to be very interested in what you're doing. I think it'll be a wonderful show. You've got some wonderful, wonderful concepts. Everybody, listeners, you've been listening to True North Paranormal. Make sure that you go to their websites. There will be an additional area on my Facebook page, Twitter page. We're also going to be attaching it to the new Paranormal Truth or Reality site that will be launching next week that will have the links to their Facebook, their YouTube, and so forth. Keep an eye on them because I think you guys are really going to go somewhere. You're fascinating people, very logical. It looks like you're very seasoned in your investigation. You know exactly what you're doing. Do you have anything that you want to say to the listeners in the last few minutes?
Well, I mean, basically, on behalf of the entire True North Paranormal team, we'd really like to thank everybody for their time. Chris, especially you, thank you so much for having a couple Canadian boys here talking a little bit about paranormal and about scientific methodology. But, you know, it was a real pleasure, and we'll all give you a big Canadian A.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a wonderful time with you guys. You're always welcome to come back on the show. When you get your release out, I'd love to have you on so that you can promote it a little bit and where everybody can watch it and so forth. I will end the show, everybody, like I do every single week. In the paranormal, as you're learning, not only in the United States but around the world, truth should always be that reality. Though that reality is different from time to time, and though we can't explain what we're doing, take the time to listen to the seasoned investigators, understand how hard it is to do their job, and give them the respect that they deserve. Together, maybe with you listening, asking the questions, and everybody observing and learning, we might just catch something out there and say, hey, we finally got that golden ticket. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality, True North Paranormal. We had the wonderful privilege of having them on tonight. I'm going to let you guys go. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next week.